And every time I read that, I remember my cousin Gary. Gary and I were just exactly alike. We lived right next door to each other until we got almost grown or bigger. And every time Gary and I got around each other, we fought and fussed and physically fought and verbally abused each other and all that stuff all those years. And when I got ready to make these amends, I was in a restaurant one day. Never been in that restaurant before since, and found out later he hadn't either. And I looked up, and he was standing at the door. And I motioned him over. And he came over reluctantly. He wasn't quite sure what I might do. And I asked him to sit down, and he sat down. And I told him, I said, Gary, I've joined Alcoholics Anonymous, and I need to try to clean up the wreckage of my past. And I have harmed you an awful lot over our lifetime, and I want to know if you would forgive me for that. He's kind of relaxed. He said, you know, Joe, I said, I want you to ask you if you'll forgive me for the things that I've done to you. The whole thing went away just like that. And that's great. But the best part about it is that from time to time, Gary comes to Alcoholics Anonymous. Not often, but from time to time over these last 20-some-odd years. When he comes to the group that I attend, and we're able to share as much as he will allow me to about the program. And hopefully someday he'll get it. Recently, in the last couple of years, he got a 25-year suspended sentence. He's not supposed to hang around with felons or be with drunks or being in bars and all that sort of thing. He's supposed to stay sober. Otherwise, they're going to take him down to McAllister. I thought to myself then, 2 years ago, they might as well just get him right now and take him on down there, because he can't do that. I couldn't say it's over 25 days, let alone 25 years. But he comes from time to time. He used to be a periodic drinker. Now he used to be a daily drinker. Now he's a periodic drinker. So he's making progress. Maybe someday.
Eyeball to eyeball, face to face, one on one. And I think what we need to really realize here is we're not, the purpose of our making amends is not to get other people to like us. Hopefully they will when we're through with it. But the purpose of it is to get rid of our fear, our guilt, and our remorse associated with that particular thing, whatever it is. And if I write you a letter, I'm never quite sure how you received it. I'm not sure what you're going to say or do to me the next time I run into you. If I call you on the telephone, I'm not sure either. But if I go to you, wherever you might be, in your office, in your home, or wherever you might be, and sit down with you, eyeball to eyeball, face to face, one on one, and make my amends, I'll never have to worry about what you're going to do to me. You would already have done it right then. I'm never going to have to worry about whether I've done my utmost. Because looking at you eyeball to eyeball, face to face, one on one, is the best I can possibly do. Now, not everybody's going to accept our amends. You know, I had a few told me, they said, Charlie, we didn't like you when you were drinking, and we're not very crazy about you now, and we'd just soon you get the hell out of here and leave us alone. But that's okay. That's okay. I've made my amends to them, and I got rid of my fear and my guilt and my remorse. Now, here he's talking about a direct eyeball-to-eyeball, face-to-face with somebody you hate. Well, if it'll work with somebody you hate, then surely it would work with somebody you love. It'll probably work with some of those you just kind of like them a little bit. It might even work with those that you dislike also. It'll really work with anybody. Eyeball-to-eyeball, face-to-face, one-on-one. There's another kind of direct amend, too. And that deals with equal proportion. Some of we alcoholics tended when we were drinking to borrow a little money whenever we did pay back, to write hot checks whenever we did pick up, to tear up automobiles whenever we did fix. We've hurt lots of people in the material way also, as well as we have simply in the mental way. It's long been known that the way you get rid of that fear and that guilt and that remorse is you make restitution in equal proportion to whatever it is that you stole or whatever it might be. He handles that in the very next paragraph. He said, most alcoholics owe money. Now, I think that's the understatement of the year right there. We do not dodge our creditors. Tell them what we're trying to do. We make no bones about our drinking. They usually know it anyway, whether we think so or not. Nor are we afraid of disclosing our alcoholism on the theory it may cause financial harm. Approaching this way, the most ruthless creditor will sometimes surprise us. Arranging the best deal we can, we let these people know we are sorry. Our drinking has made us slow to pay. We must lose our fear of creditors, no matter how far we have to go, for we're liable to drink if we're afraid to face them. I think what he's saying to me here is this, that if I owe you some money, I need to come to you and say, look, you and I both know I owe you $800. I don't have the money to pay you today. I wish I could. But I'd like to start paying you $10 a week. And if you're like most people, you'll be tickled to death to get $10 a week. That's better than nothing. And I start paying you $10 a week. And some morning I wake up and I say, hey, that sucker's paid off. I don't have to worry about that any longer. The fear of what you think, the guilt, the remorse is gone for that particular one. Then I go to the next one. I say, now you and I both know that I owe you $1,200. Can't pay you today. Wish I could. But I'd like to start paying you $20 a week. By now I'm probably making a little more money. And I start paying the $20 a week. And some morning I wake up and I say, hey, that sucker's paid off too. The fear of the guilt, remorse is gone. Then I go to the next one. Then I go to the next one. And then I go to the next one. And someday I wake up, and by golly, they're all paid off. No fear, no guilt, no remorse left there. Eyeball to eyeball, face to face, equal proportion. It really does work.
Let me tell you a story about my brother. I just thought about it. He has been sober now, called Anonymous, for 25 years, and he owed a lot of money. And he went to come to me and asked me what he should do about it. I said, well, your sponsor's named Leo. Why don't you go talk to Leo? Leo J. Hobbs, he's dead now, sober a long time. So he went to Leo, and he said, Leo, I have all this money that I owe, and I'd like to refinance my loans and get my payments down. And he looked at Jerry and said, you don't need to borrow any more money. You need to pay some back. And he said, besides that, financial problems don't have anything to do with money. And he didn't explain that to Jerry. And he didn't explain it to me. But I understand it today. You think about it. Financial problems don't have anything to do with money. That's all.
You're not going to explain it either, huh?
No.
Okay. We'll leave it right there, then. Again, I hear some of you saying, and I hear awful good. I hear some of you saying, well, Charlie, that's probably true, paying those people back for $800 or $1,200 or a couple thousand. But what if it's $50,000? What if it's $100,000? What if it's $500,000? What if it's $1,000,000? Can we pay that back? Well, I don't see why not. If we're smart enough to steal it, we're probably smart enough to pay it back. You know, I think we forget from step three on, God's with us. And if we are to do these things, then God's going to make it possible to do so, providing we're willing to do our part. And we had an old friend that lived in Tulsa, one of mine and Joe's mentors both, a guy named Dan. Dan finally moved out here to Bakersfield, and he died a few years ago. He would have 49 years sobriety this year if he had lived. When Dan was 29 years sober, he said, Charlie, I paid the last one of them last week. Took him 29 years to pay them. I said, Dan, how do you feel? He said, I feel about 8 foot tall. Now, Dan was about 5 foot one, a little bitty fella. He said, this is the first time in my life that I can ever remember that I don't owe somebody something for what I've stolen from them in the past. And he said, I feel pretty good about old Dan. When Dan was drinking, he was in the oil business down in Texas. He hooked them, and he hooked them big, too. And it took him 29 years to pay them back. But he did it. And we can do it, too, if we wish to. I tell you how good a con artist Dan is, or was. His wife, Sarah, who later turned out to be a beautiful, beautiful Al-Anon, she took him to the state insane asylum in Big Springs, Texas, to have him committed for alcoholic insanity. Now, the head psychiatrist interviewed Sarah, and then he interviewed Dan. And after a while, Dan left, and Sarah was locked up. She stayed there for a year. She learned how to live better electrically and all that stuff they do to people like that. And she told us one time, she said, I've forgiven him for everything else, but I'll never forgive that son of a bitch for that, she said. But we can do it. We can do those things if we really want to do them.
I spent an awful lot of time with Dan and Sarah and for a number of years. And Dan was paying all that money back, and he told me the same day we were playing bridge that night, and he said he paid the last payment today. And he said, I feel great. It took me 29 years to pay him off. And I'd known Dan for quite some time, and Dan never seemed to miss anything. He drove a new car and lived in a nice house and had a nice furniture. He and Sherry went where they wanted to go, so paying that money back wasn't that hard for Dan. It seemed like it turned out pretty well. Because I believe this too, if God's with you, you know, you can do anything. And he did it.
Okay, the bottom of page 78. Perhaps we've committed a criminal offense, which might land us in jail if it were known to the authorities. We may be short in our accounts and unable to make good. We've already admitted this in confidence to another person. That's when we took step 5. But we are sure we would be in prison or lose our job if it were known. Maybe it's only a petty offense, such as padding the expense account. Most of us have done that sort of thing. Maybe we are divorced and have remarried. But having kept up the alimony to number 1, she's indignant about it. Has a warrant out for arrest. That's a common form of trouble, too. Although these reparations take innumerable forms, there are some general principles which we find guiding. Reminding ourselves that we decided to go to any lengths to find a spiritual experience.
More prayer.
We ask that we be given strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. We may lose our position, or reputation, or face jail. But we are willing, we have to be. We must not shrink at anything. Usually, however, other people are involved. Therefore, we are not to be the hasty and foolish martyr who would needlessly sacrifice others to save himself from the alcoholic pit. A man we know had remarried. Because of resentment and drinking, he had not paid alimony to his first wife. She was furious. She went to court and got an order for his arrest. He had commenced our way of life, had secured a position, and was getting his head above water. It would have been impressive heroics if he had walked up to the judge and said, "Here I am." We thought he ought to be willing to do that if necessary, but if he were in jail, he could provide nothing for either family. We suggested he write his first wife, admitting his faults and asking forgiveness. He did, and also sent a small amount of money. He told her what he would try to do in the future. He said he was perfectly willing to go to jail if she insisted. Of course she did not, and the whole situation has long since been adjusted. There's where we take other people into consideration, too. Page 80.